Coming up next, of course, is Trust the Problem with your host, Patricia Sun. Now, she is a philosopher, a leader, an innovator, speaker, a teacher, a problem solver, and a communication expert of a new way to live. And people can call in to talk about the problems and ask questions, innocent and deep, creative and brave, philosophical and spiritual. She is a scientific mystic who explains paradox and transcends dualistic thinking. She is genuine, supportive, and intuitive. And now, here is your amazing host, Patricia Sun.
Well, welcome so much to Trust the Problem, too. I think today the problems that I'm going to address are really going to be about, I'm going to set a little theme, and it's so big that we can cover almost anything, and you're all invited to call in if you feel so inclined. Even if it seems it's a little off the subject, don't worry about it, because what I want to talk about today is truth and reason and spontaneity. And I threw in the spontaneity at the end because truth and reason are something that we're starving for right now. And I was reading some quote from Thomas Jefferson just a little bit ago, and he said, "It's an insult to our citizens to question whether they are rational beings or not, and blasphemy against religion to suppose it cannot stand the test of truth and reason." So he was defending freedom of religion and freedom of the government intervention on about people's religion. And so it's that, but I'm not really just talking about that. It's a kind of thinking. One of the theories that I developed a long time ago is that we're in the midst of an evolutionary leap and that our brains are changing. And that we're a young species, and we're about to become something more. And the stuff, the medium, the fuel by which we evolve, by which we become more, is having problems. And we will definitely have problems about the truth and about reason. And I threw spontaneity in because in our immature logical kind of orientation collectively, we kind of fear spontaneity. We know it's wonderful, but we still sort of fear it. And do we have a caller? I didn't quite hear that.
Yes, we do, actually, Patricia. Good. We have Lorraine from Orange County on the line with you.
Oh, great. Well, go right ahead, Lorraine. I'd love to hear what your question is. Go ahead.
Thank you, Patricia. I wanted to ask you about hot flashes and depression.
Oh, okay.
And they seem to come together.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried antidepressants, and I thought I would try allopathic medicine and give it a whirl,
mm-hmm.
maybe hoping for a quick solution. But it didn't work out so good. It's invasive. Is that what you said?
Non-invasive, yeah, allopathic. The one thing good about it is it doesn't really harm you. And sometimes some of the more potent drug stuff, sometimes it helps and sometimes it hurts too. So, but go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Okay, sure. And if my phone cuts out, you know, that's okay, because I know people heard the question. And then I'll get the download in a couple of days. But and then the therapist that I went to was such a behaviorist that he might have pushed my buttons because I don't go out and socialize much, and I wanted to address that issue of people kind of getting down on themselves for not getting out. Do you want to get out? And yet
uh-huh.
you don't want to, and you don't want to feel like you're your own mother pushing yourself, or
uh-huh.
that's how I was feeling. So I got disillusioned with a lot of that process, so I'm just taking a small dose of medication just to keep the... Because when you quit that stuff, it's bad. They tell you it's not addictive, but if you quit cold turkey, your body isn't quite, it's going, what?
Well, you know, you're right. And you know, one of the things they've found, even the simplest of medicines, the headache medicines, they help at first, but then they cause rebound headaches. They actually cause worse headaches and more
exactly.
of them. So, you know, that's the trouble with drugs. And it's a good opportunity, and the issue of hot flashes and depression and the hormonal shifting and changing and the life change. I don't just mean physical, although it's physical based on age, but there really is a, there are episodes to our lives, you know, when we're babies and we're toddlers and we're, you know, small children and then we're teenagers and when we're young adults.
Oh, yeah.
Each thing has a problem.
Yeah.
Each stage of development has a difficulty, has a challenge. And I don't, you know, again, of course, it's trust the problem. I think that that's a part of the way we grow, and it is intrinsic in the growing. So I see the same thing about menopause and depression and hot flashes. One of the things, so it's a new challenge, you know, it's, and there was something else you said, I was trying to remember that little piece, but I'll come back to it, I guess. But the thing is that we are needing to look at, it was about the headaches and taking drugs and stuff. You do want to be careful about the drugs. I just say, you know, look into it, see what the, you know, the counter indications are about the drugs, the problems. But all the while, don't hate it that you have this problem.
Okay.
That's one of the things. You know, it's like adolescents hate it that they feel awkward and that they don't know what's really the right thing to do and they want to be grown up and they don't know yet. And little toddlers, you know, want to be able to do everything. And we want to be able to do everything when we're going through menopause. We don't like the idea that we're, our bodies seem to be changing in a way that we don't like. But the truth is, our bodies are, you know, like, I hate to say this, it sounds so trite in a way, but it's what Jesus said. He said, the body is your body is the temple of your spirit. And if you really begin to cherish your body and take care of it, I remember I had a horse, now I have a dog, but both require care. And I've always noticed that I give them sometimes better care than I give myself. I used to say that when I had my horse. Gosh, I take better care of this horse than I do of me.
Oh.
And by that I meant I tuned into the horse. I bought a lame horse with a magnificent, beautiful one, but the owner who had her previously didn't exercise her and kept her in the stall too long, and she became lame. And I knew I could heal her. I just knew it. So I got a good deal on a lame horse. That's like buying a car without a motor. But
yeah.
She got well in 3 months. She was well, and in 6 months she was perfectly well. But it took time, and it took tuning into her as a horse. Now, this may seem like a little bit of a digression, but it really isn't. It's learning how to tune in to even our bodies or our children or our mates or whatever the problem may be, but in this case, to tune into your body and the stage that it's in and not buy the old scripts that come from simplistic thinking. You know that you have to get old. Now, you will get older, of course, but there's a lot of things we call getting old that are not about getting old. They're about, when you're older, having stuff that's not processed yet. And when you get older, it has certain effects on you. And it's a natural part of the cycle and the shift of the, you know, the depression and the, and the depression isn't exactly natural, but the hot flashes are. And if you began to tune into your body as though this was a unique being from another planet, and a wondrous being that wanted to know you and you wanted to know it, and you had to really, and the reason I use that metaphor is because it lets you think in a fresh way. I remember doing counseling and classes with special education teachers, and I'd say, you know, pretend these children are not handicapped in any way, but just different and have come from another planet, and you want to see them with those new eyes, and you want to earnestly be open to stretch to see them and then tell them whatever you think might be helpful to them, and ask them to help you understand. It's that same metaphor. If we begin to look at our bodies as truly temples of our spirit. An incredible thing that we have awareness of. This is the super thing about being human. You know, animals are aware and so on, but and domestic animals like dogs and cats and horses and so on are quite socialized as we are because they've lived with us so long. But humanity is making a leap in being able to really just not think simplistically, but think in a creative way that involves truthfulness and paying attention to facts and allowing, like our theme today, allowing some spontaneity. So I would say perhaps the behaviorist counselor was using trite expressions of something deeper. Deeper. And what you want is the spontaneity, the joy, the compassion for when you feel depressed. When you feel depressed, and I realize I went through a huge part of my life depressed, and because I'm basically an optimistic person and knew a lot the last, you know, having work that I did, you know, used by other people and so on, and it made life hard.
Yeah.
And so, so it made me depressed. And maybe somebody saw me, they may not think I was depressed, but I was. Because I was sad. I was holding some energy back.
Exactly.
Pardon?
Yes, exactly. Forgive me, that's the phone.
Exactly. So when you're depressed, you're not fully spontaneous. You don't know where, like, to put it. I mean, it's as though the ground has changed before you, and you don't know which place to put the next foot and the next step and where to put your foot. And so what happens is you tend to stop.
And, yeah, dig in.
And so it's okay if you stop. So you're right, and the counselor had something true in what he was saying, or she was saying, in that you do want more adventure, you do want more spontaneity, you want companionship, you want friendship, you want, even if it's like, you know, with a dog or a cat or a friend, that you only maybe even talk to once a week or once a month, but you have a good, healthy, safe feeling with that person. That's the criteria for a friend, that you feel safe with them. They will not, you know, they'll be supportive. They'll tell you something they don't agree with, but they'll tell you in a way that's respectful and supportive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
okay.
So basically, try to contemplate. I would say meditate, but it's lighter than meditation. Just kind of contemplate, daydream, brainstorm with yourself. What would delight your body? You know, maybe it's body work, maybe it's a massage, maybe it's a walk. Maybe it's a different kind of food. Maybe it's feeling stronger. Maybe it's sleeping better.
Yeah.
But whatever it may be, and sometimes it's something very different, like going on a trip or listening to music or doing something very different that we don't think of as taking care of our bodies. But
certainly, yes.
Yeah.
But okay, but it's just being open to that message from the intuitive side and with compassion,
and actually,
rather than criticism. Yeah,
exactly. It's like have a little dialogue with your body. And the thing is that what's important is that this has to be respected as a soft thing. It's a soft thing. It's not something that you dial up and you say, "What's the answer to this? 1, 2, 3." It is you're pioneering. You are allowing your body to not just go back into the old slot. Oh, she's hit menopause, now she's going to be depressed, and she's going to get older, and she's going to get, what was the other thing, hot flashes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, that's a box. And while it may have some truth in it, it's not the whole story. It's just a transitory state.
Good.
Sorry?
It is. All right. I think that gives me a lot of clarity to work with. And
oh, good. Okay. And if it doesn't seem to be working, you know, you have some yes buts down the road a little, give me a call again, and we'll see what we can do.
Absolutely. I appreciate that, especially our society gives you such boxes for women at a certain age, like I'm supposed to be chortling around all heavy sets and playing cards. And I'm like, oh, come on, there's got to be more than that.
No. Oh, no, don't do that.
No. No. Okay, no. That image I wanted to share because I figured that was kind of cool.
Well,
but there's
a
lot there.
It's a huge issue, and it is a great sharing. You did it every many, many people a lot of service just even bringing it up. It's great.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Oh, good. I love all my callers when I had my other show. Everybody was so real and tried and was earnest, and the spontaneity, the synchronicity, the flow of things always worked. And so I still am grateful for that. And it is another kind of thinking. It's a, I don't know exactly the right word to say, but when people connect genuinely, when there's that truth, that earnestness, then reason has our intellect has a different field in which to process. It is processing what the intuitive mind can send, what love can send, what inspiration can send, what the body can tell you, these nuances, what dreams can tell you. This is the spontaneity part where we are not boxing it so tight. And then truth and reason become something else. Truth doesn't become some literal fact merely. It becomes an openness to what is and a seeking of understanding what is. There's a great quote, I don't even know if I didn't quote it last time, but I quote it all the time because I love it so much. I did. But anyway, it's a great quote by an English composer and conductor who won many awards. And he said, truth is a dancer in love with paradox. And I love that quote because truth is then seen as moving, alive, dancing, so it has the spirit of a certain amount of joy, and following something, following the music, following the impulses of the body, following some kind of flow, some kind of inspiration. So truth is a dancer in love with paradox. Now, paradox is the recognition, the word that exists for the recognition, that as we use our reason and look at things, we begin to see that there's always this kind of duality. There's this, and then there's that. And sometimes things are contradictions. And they're both true, and it's difficult because our linear mind wants to say, well, only one can be right. They can't both be right. They're opposite things. But indeed, they can both be right. And that's a key realization for this next level of thinking. It's a release point. It lets us think beyond duality, that we're actually moving to a new place where we can see duality, we can have it, we can see paradox, we can see contradictions and poles and opposites and one side and another side. We can see them. That's data. That's great. But to see above it and not as a polarization, it's the difference between seeing the world flat to seeing it round. And you truly don't even get the full impact around until you go to outer space and you look back at it. That puts everything in relationship to everything else in a different way, which is why in the early 80s I made these t-shirts that and a logo that I came to as meditating on something. I wanted to have an example of, that joined these two opposite kinds of thinking, the linear mind and the intuitive mind, the soft mind, the receptive, and the receptive has a lot to do with the spontaneity. And because it's open. It isn't prepackaging it. It's letting something just happen and come in. And that's why dreaming, by the way, is so important, because your linear mind is sort of put aside and you can have real emotion, real complex thinking from the intuitive mind that's not handicapped by the linear mind saying, but that can't be. If we believed everything that the linear mind said, that can't be, we would never progress. And indeed, it's when we don't progress when we do that. And all through the cycles of human history, we've had, you know, inquisitions and polarizations and dominations and totalitarian kind of thinking. And, you know, in small situations and in big. And that is the kind of bankruptcy of creativity. It's like it's starving. It's cutting it off. It's not letting it function. And we have a huge capacity to be creative. And that's why I call the show Trust Thumbs, because we need to begin, I believe, to relax and enjoy some of our problems. Instead of just saying it shouldn't be this way, it shouldn't have happened this way. Maybe it isn't just. Maybe it is something bad. Maybe it is something painful or discomforting or unfair. And all of that is true. Often it is true. Sometimes it's not so true, but often it's true. But in the midst of that truth, there's also many other things happening where people are growing and discovering and rising to their better angels and becoming more and disenthralling themselves, as Lincoln said. You know, we need to disenthrall ourselves from this polarized thinking and this judgmentalness, and we need to let spirit inspire us. And that's another way of saying let that higher order of creative capacity come into being. And I said that very carefully because the intuitive mind can think thoughts never thought before. It can let new information come into being that didn't exist before you opened to the question and let yourself be receptive. And if you let yourself be receptive with a certain inspired feeling, with a vision of openness or healthiness or goodwill or aliveness, then you have set the gauge on the frequency and you've put it at a very high level. And then your creativity comes in at a very high level. And your solutions would come in at a very, almost miraculous level. You know, Abraham Maslow talked a great deal about the creative person, and he felt that was what psychologists, or at least he felt we didn't study enough of what creative people are really like, and how, what causes them to be that way, and what is their real process. And one of the things that was so significant is that they would use their linear mind. This was very universal. They would use their linear mind to gather all the data, all the facts that they could. And then I think he called it they'd go fishing. I mean, literally go out doing some daydreamy thing, something kind of what we would call mindless, what we might even in our supercharged culture of linear thinking say wasting time. And so it's something open. And in the course of doing that, something would pop into the person's mind, the solution. And often great creative solutions, I believe, come in our dreams, come when we're sleeping, because the metaphors leap the boundaries of the linear mind's containing something. The linear mind's actually creating the problem by not being able to envision a solution. And it's saying, this is a problem and there's no solution. And that's what's wrong with medicine today, and that's what's wrong with politics and with teaching and with men and women in relationships and everything that's human, because it keeps coming up. Because that's the thing, that's the very thing we are learning to transform. and to think bigger than. So when we think something is insoluble, it really is just a challenge to broaden the boundaries, ask a higher question, ask a more inspired question, be open to a bigger view, see what else could it be, what would be the most wonderful thing it could be, and then sort of work backwards and then let some solutions come into being. And they do. And it is really amazing. And, you know, Einstein talked about this. This is, all the really brilliant creative people, even Jesus and Buddha, in their own way, in their own culture, in their own time, were saying in their language of the time, you know, be receptive to the spirit. Be open to that. And be inspired to what is good. And that the Pharisees, who were the rule makers and the religious dogma of the time, were the people that Jesus most criticized, actually, quite strongly and a lot. And interestingly, he called them hypocrites. And hypocrites is a Greek word, and at the time, hypocrite means an actor on the stage. So these days, when we have hypocritical, when people are being hypocritical, they're not just not telling the truth, which is sometimes the case and often the case. But even if they are telling something true, you can still be a hypocrite. So the hypocrite means you're not believing it. You're not living it. You're not believing it. You're acting like it. You found what's politically correct, socially or politically or whatever, and you're acting it. And sometimes we even accept roles imposed upon us, like aging or other kinds of boxing that we do to people and then therefore do to ourselves also. And they are useful at one point for a certain amount of observation, but like two poles opposite, they're useful. It's useful to have duality, this side and that side. But at some point, you must have the release on the power of your own mind and intelligence to think beyond that, to think bigger than that, for your own health, for your own creativity, to move to the heaven on earth that is, you know, predicted. That's the place that intuitively all the religions of the world know that we're not living as we could be, and that the guidepost toward that direction is about honesty, and it's about being respectful and about love. And that's because that intuitive mind handles the generation of more connections, more awareness, more perception, more solutions, more possibilities, more vision, new ways of seeing things that just didn't even exist before. And many times the intuitive mind will invent a matrix, a metaphor. And I started to say before, I just wanted to finish this one little thought about the dreams. I really think a lot of our great insights come from our dreams, that we have the dream, we get it in a metaphor, and then we forget it because we're, you know, sleeping, we don't remember it in our waking minds. But then when we ask the question again, it like pops up. It's like it's an epiphany. It's a revelation. And great teachers do this also, is that they will plant seeds, as my acupuncturist said about me when I was, you plant seeds, but you plant seeds that are already germinated. So planting an already germinated seed is the revelation is already awake in the metaphor, in the story, in the voice, in the living energy of connecting and being open to one another. And I can see my dog when he watches every move I make. Children watch every move you make. They they're trying to figure out all the time what's going on. And they must. And it's an interesting thing that human beings can create sort of enough security or enough we look okay to not need to really pay attention anymore, except pay attention to keeping the blinders we've devised that make us correct in place. And the discomfort as we get older, you know, it's interesting, when we're young, we have to learn to adapt and be, I don't want to say not so self-oriented, but that's true. I mean that in a very wonderful way. Children need to be self-oriented, and young people, like even into your early 20s, you need to be self-oriented. You're trying to figure out who yourself is and how to do that and how to be it and how to function in the world with the other selves around you. But one of the challenges of being in older years, and the middle ground years are the years of doing a lot of stuff, sort of trusting yourself and taking chances, but also measured chances and going for what you have after you hit about 27, 28, 29, 30. That's the time where you really develop your ethics, your sense of limitations, your sense of what should be. And it sets you up for your next stage of actualizing in the world, and that's wonderful. But as you get a little bit more, a little older, then it's all the cycle repeats, but it's compounded and folded in on itself. So again, you have to be more self oriented. You've learned how to care for the other person. You've learned what your ethics are in that regard, and you can spend your life in your 30s and 40s. You can spend your life creating value in the world, hopefully. I mean, we don't all do that, but I mean, that's sort of the setup. And then, and as you get older, there's like a closing down again. But that closing down is a recouping, a reclaiming of all that you have experienced and all the knowledge that your brain, all the nuances, the contemplations, the dreams, the insights, the intuitions, the contradictions, the things that didn't work, the things that were wonderful, the things that were wonderful you never thought would be wonderful. And deep awareness capability is there. And so it's very important that we slow down and take the time to see ourselves new and not put ourselves in the boxes of what is old imagery and put yourself in the alive box, the box of creativity, the box of healing, the box of inspiration. And that's a bigger box. It's a much bigger box. And that's what gives us then power to be, the power to open your mind to the inspiration that spirit is longing to give you. But we get into strong ruts as a species, and many of these ruts are handed down for thousands of years. And we really, and I call that rut old-style thinking. And old-style thinking is when you think so either or, so black and white, and the fear is really the motivator. And domination is one of the characteristics. You want to dominate other people. There's not a lot of trust in the process. There's not a lot of trust in the problem itself and being willing to trust letting it unfold. So knowing that this next level is really comes to I see like lotus opening. It's a blooming. It is another level of blooming. And when men and women get to that older time, especially when women's bodies shift, it's such a big hallmark for them that that they've gone into menopause, and it's interesting. Menopause means a pause each month, and it's as though you transcend the pause each month, and you don't need to do that anymore. You can almost stay in the state, but your whole self is now challenged. Every unhealed drama, every part of your body that's holding energy, is all about to be processed. That's what's being asked for. And sadly, what we do in our collective cultures around the world, really, we just say people are getting old, and, oh, well, that'll happen to you because you're getting old, and that's just how it is, you know, you just get old. Well, yeah, we do all just get old, but we don't all get old. Just means that so many things we attribute to being old are actually about being old. They're about not finishing the process. So for our caller and all that she inspired with her question, I think trusting that there really is a process going on, and what is being asked is that you look at it all new. You look at it with gentle, loving eyes. You look at it with inspiration in the direction of healthiness, which means you will give room and space and time for grief to come up. And see, people don't always think that. But one of the reasons we get bad posture or we get certain diseases is because we have injury that's not processed. And this is universal. This is something no one escapes. I mean, everyone has this to do in one way or another, no matter how enlightened, there's still that processing. It never stops. What happens when you become more enlightened is you make more with the process. You do more with it. You accomplish more with it. And that's what we're here to do. It's not that you find some place where you land and everything is perfect. This is a kind of a fallacy. It can happen always in short times, you know, for episodes. But a lot like the escapism of our culture, where we take, you know, we have a headache and so we take a pain medication, you know, and then we get the rebound headaches, and they've just paid attention to the facts that it gets worse. So what is that saying? That's saying that when you get a headache, maybe what you need to do is go into a calm and quiet place and see what is the constriction, what's hurting, what's tight, what's not moving, where do you feel thwarted, where do you feel stopped or not alive, where do you feel injured and feel powerless to do anything about it. And this is where the truth comes in. And the reason is the contemplating of this, the rational discovery of observing the truth. And that's how you join those two together. They're very wondrous together. And they are left brain and right brain. One might even say that reason and inspiration create truth. But any way you look at it, it really doesn't matter. It's just a part of being aware of the power of those states of being. I don't even want to say words. Those words are lovely and fine and definitely something to sort of put on your refrigerator and make you remind yourself that what you're really finding is the joy and the power and the truth and the healing and the aliveness, and that's the journey of being human. That's what we're here for. And when we allow spontaneity in the mixture, you let the upheavals come that are necessary to break up the old pattern. Because we all get into ruts, and something that we discovered when we were floundering and we were forced to be creative and think, And we did flounder and we did use our creativity and we did evolve some kind of solution or new insight or new way of doing it, that becomes the new great saving thing, and then it becomes the norm. And then eventually, as time goes on, that norm becomes less and less adequate, more and more stultifying, more and more not, because life and creation move. I used to always say in my workshops years ago, there's only one thing certain in life, and that's change. And our linear minds are with the way we hold our intuitive mind as sort of dangerous and not controlled, and the way we hold our linear mind as, oh, we've got everything under control. We know the facts. We know the details. We know where it goes. We know how it should be. When that's the case, then the cycles are sort of clumsier. They're stiffer. They go in clumps, you know, and we go through cycles through millennia, and we go through cycles in decades, and we go through cycles in a day that do all of this. But when you start to see that that's part of a process and not a bad thing, when the norm starts to become stultified, fine, and not adequate, what we use is our reason and our truthfulness to say, this, you know, the emperor has no clothes on, or this isn't true, or this doesn't work, or, you know, maybe at one time it did. And I firmly believe this, as I've really reflected on it through the years and all the studies of history, that this is how it works. And every bad cultural state had as its origin some point a good idea, but a good idea that was not held in a framework of allowing evolution, not in a framework that would let it move. The idea, the organization, the bureaucracy, the rules become more important than the essence of what those rules were devised to protect and create. That's why in religion, which is so spiritually rich and full of metaphors that heal us and keep opening doors for our spiritual empowerment, keeps being turned into dogmas and political organization, which then robs it of the spiritual power. And so devastatingly that if you use truth and reason, you see that the politically organized religion is no longer practicing the spirit of the religion, because the rules and the control and the way it should look, and that's the reason why cults and tyrants and dogmas and using fear to get control over people is such a sin. I mean, it's so off the mark. Sin is an archery term from the Aramaic, which translated into the English, sin, an archery term, which means that you missed the bullseye. And this is a very powerful way to see it. Sin exists, but it's when we miss the point. And the more we insist on missing the point, the more we use our life force to enforce missing the point, then we create what we call evil or sin. And evil, spoke backwards, as I said, is live. So when we refuse to live, we refuse the flow, we refuse the unfolding, the pioneering, the bewildered state of, what do I do now? This doesn't feel good. So what do I do? And to ask that question with a soft heart, without persecution, without judgmental clobbering inside, and to hang around with people who will help you soften it and be more open, that's the secret. That's the next step. Is when we culturally, collectively, as a species, have the tolerance for the process, then we are moving. Then we are creating. You know, trusting the process is what, for decades, I've been saying, is our unfolding power. It is living awake. Because we have to kind of fool ourselves
We have to kind of blind ourselves. Like horses have blinders so they don't get too scared, so they can pay attention to what the person driving them is saying and where they want them to go. Because if they see things fluttering on the side or driving by fast or coming up, their nervous system can't take it. They will leap up. They will jump away, and they won't listen. And even when you train dogs, the key thing is when they're doing something they shouldn't do, instead of scolding them or yelling at them, you just devise ways to help them change their focus so they pay attention to something else. Then they break their attention to that thing, and then they're paying attention to you. That's exactly how you train children, in the same way. Instead of scolding or hitting or yelling or blaming or humiliating, you just intervene. And you change the situation. And if you just keep doing that, then they learn two things. They learn whatever you were trying to teach them was, dangerous to touch the hot pot in the stove or to go down the stairs when you don't know how to go down the stairs, you'll fall down. So that they learn to avoid certain things, but they also learn that what grown-ups do is when they want something to happen, they think, they empathize, and they intervene. They step forward, and they redirect to something better, something more interesting, something better. And when we do that, we are in charge of those blinders. We don't have to have them there, written in stone to mix all these metaphors together. We don't have to lock it up so tight. We can realize we can be creative by being spontaneous in the moment, and the spontaneity outcome, the fruitfulness of the outcome of the spontaneity has to do with the goodwill with which you entered the moment where you allowed the spontaneity. Now, couldn't say that too many more times. That's so it. That's the point. That's why goodwill is important. It's not a make nice thing. Oh, you should have goodwill. No. You can even get mad at people and everything else. That's not it. The thing is, when you enter into creation, when you let yourself be a participant in the power of unraveling the awareness and consciousness of the universe and being a creator of it, in fact, you recognize your connection to everyone and everything. You begin to see the spirit inside everything. This is all part of the bigger truth. Then your reason is expanded to a much bigger level. And then as you adventure, as you, in those moments when you fill with juice, you see somebody and they look delicious, they look wonderful, and I don't just mean lust. I mean, you see more in them, you see joy in them, you see intelligence in them, you see spirit in them, you go, wow, I really like that person, or even just for that moment. You trust that you let yourself respond back with goodwill, not to own them, not to capture them, not to control them, not to push them away because it's scary, which is the other side of that coin, but to let the spontaneity of your response float on the ocean of the goodwill. This is enlightenment. This is the creative place. This is where the journey is lighter. This is where you are filled with light, because the goodwill is another way of saying letting your spirit and your heart and your body be filled with light. Now, there'll be times when you're going through difficult things, and that will be very hard to do. Impossible to do even, perhaps, one might say. But even when it's that difficult, there's a part of you that can remember what it was like when it wasn't that difficult. And this is the healing. This is the process, with a capital P, like Providence, with a capital P. This is the sacred process. This is how we become enlightened. Because what happens then is that we begin to alter
our interface with the universe by making our base, being our soul, our self, our bodies, big enough to interact. And when we set the frequency by our free will choice of heart and goodwill, what happens is we change what is happening. You can say things that are challenging and difficult and hard for people to hear, and sometimes people just get mad at you. I've had that happen. But mostly they don't, or at least on reflection, then they definitely don't. Because at some level, people know when you're really loving them. And often when you get a harsh reaction, it's one of two things. Either you really still had an element of judgmentalness, even if it was very tiny in the midst of great love. This is how you become refined. Even if it was very tiny, then it matches energy with the person's own judgment against themselves, which they are trying very hard to deny. And that's what makes angry reactions. That's what makes people simplistic, controlling, and angry, and afraid to risk looking in that spontaneous process place, because they don't dare go there. If they lift the veil into that spontaneous place, all their shadow comes pouring out, and they don't want to see that above all. So the good news is the way you facilitate that in the world is you just do it in your piece of the planet, the piece you're sitting in. You just do it in you, and then what happens is that you generate this energy, and it starts to draw it out in the other person. Now, sometimes people are just very invested. They have their money, they have their power, they have their title. Through stealing or lying or coercing or manipulating or dominating, and they want to hold on to that. That reminds me so much of the old saying in the days of Civil War and after, when they said, who suffered more, the slave holder or the slave? And in that question was the realization that while the slave was violated and wronged and damaged and killed and harmed, the slave holder who did that, their soul was so harmed because they could not let their soul access into reality. They are handicapped in a terrible way. When somebody harms you, you know they harmed you. Your job then is to work above it, get beyond it, move around it, not turn it around, not let it get you, get over it, use it as pay dirt, bring truth into the world, change the perspective, do something. This is the challenge of the victim. But the victimizer has the job of seeing that that's what they did. And it's interesting, because we are fundamentally earnest and ethical beings and are part of God, we never are satisfied with that. We will never let that be the case. That's one reason you can have hope, because it just will not be allowed. And it's because God is real, or the order of the universe is real, or whatever name you want to give it. This is all part of the good news. And I'm trying to remember, there was a quote about Thomas Jefferson where he was saying something like that. I can't remember it exactly. But he was saying, do we think in a way we're fooling God? And it is amazing to me that people who use New Age information and religious information and political information in the name of doing something good so often like saying the good things, like the attention they get from good people for saying the good things, but no qualms at all about not living it. It's just amazing. And, of course, there are qualms. No conscious, the matrix of a conscious mind is held in that either-or reality, and so they have to keep going to that one side to justify their position. But they cannot be really creative. That's why they have to steal ideas. They cannot truly generate it, because that requires the innocence. It requires the earnestness. And this is a very private and personal and powerful reality inside each human being. And as the Indians had the saying, you know, don't judge a man until you walk a mile in his moccasins. We can never know for sure all the trusting of the problem, the creating of the problems that they then have to trust, what the setup is, you know. So giving each other that compassion, that room, that space, and above all, giving it to ourselves is really what I mean by trust the problem, and it is trusting the process with a capital P. And with that, I think I know we're coming to a close here. I want to remind you, I do have a website, patriciasun.com. Please sign up on the email list so we can let you know when I'm traveling or something is happening. And thank you so much for listening, and it's been my joy and my pleasure to be with you.